Okay. Thank you, brother. It's the best day ever. Wow. Oh, my God. I had never been blessed to hear your ministry before, your voice, your spirit. Oh, my God. Thank you so very much. That was awesome. I'm just going to look at you for a minute, okay, because I'm seeing you today as I've never seen you before. I had a gift of an experience that has opened my eyes wider than they've been opened before, allowing me to see more light than I've ever seen before. And it's very humbling, this experience that I've been having. I feel so privileged and honored just to be in the land of the living. I feel privileged and honored to have been called to be here, to be allowed to just be one of the ministers in this place. An event that I experienced recently has opened my eyes to be able to see you in a more transparent way than I've seen you before. You know how we normally see everything pretty opaque. When we look at a person, we pretty much see a solid body or a sea of solid bodies. But the gift that I was given through an experience I went through since I saw you last has me. Has me at a place where I have to, on purpose, like consciously make everything opaque again. And when I'm not on purpose making it opaque, it just springs right back into being translucent. And if you don't know what my definition of translucent is, it's that I can see you and I can also see through you. I can clearly see what we all talk about all the time, which is that we are vessels of light, that we are spiritual beings here having a temporary human experience. It's difficult to remember that, except that we have periodic experiences that awaken us to that. So I've never saw through you before. I've seen you, but never so clearly as a vessel of light, a temple of the Almighty. Sometimes I say it doesn't matter how the universe gets our eyes wide open, just so it does. Sometimes it attempts to open our eyes with little whispers and little nudges that remind us to lend more of our time and more of our on-purposeness and marveling at the beauty of the world. We just kind of fall asleep. We take for granted the miracle of being alive. This world is outstanding, and though I know it's not home, I know that I can bring home to it. To just marvel at the beauty of the world. I've been in the field with so many people recently over the last couple of weeks where I have gone, oh my God, look at those clouds. And they've responded with things like, oh, I've seen better. You should see the clouds in Florida. I just got back from there. Tropical clouds are all the rage. These are okay. Whoa, look at that tree. Oh, it's okay, but have you seen the trees in Northern California? They put this tree to shame. And I just sit there with a smile in my heart going, yeah, I know. That's where I live a lot of my life. But I don't want to anymore. I want to turn up the volume on my capacity and my intention to marvel at the beauty of the world. To step forward in my intention and capacity to not see you as opaque anymore. To keep my eyes open, my heart open enough so that I can see you transparently. It looks like you're a body. But you're really the temple of light, the temple of the Almighty. Sometimes when the Creator cannot get me through a whisper or a nudge, sometimes it has to grab me, shake me. It's called a shake awake. Just a shake awake. I don't care how the universe does it. Just so that periodically in my life it occurs. Because sometimes even if it looks like I've gone back to seeing everything as opaque as I did before, that's impossible. Once you stretch a rubber band, even though it may appear it has gone back to its original size, it has not. There has been a change. There's been an opening, an awakening, and a stretching, and a growing. I don't care how the universe did it. I'm just glad that it did. I had some nurses and doctors recently tell me that this phase of seeing things transparently is just a phase. They assured me that after a time, everything would return to normal. I would not get so blown away by looking at a cloud or a tree. I would not be reporting to my brother and to my sister-in-law when they came into my room and saw me weeping, sobbing like a baby, and they asked, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Nothing's wrong. Everything's right." What triggered this? Dude, I was just looking at the dust on my broken lamp. I have never seen anything more beautiful in my life. Where I've been, I got that the only difference between a dusty lamp and a shiny one is a judgment, an agreement that we've made. I remember being a little kid, dust on the furniture was one of my favorite playgrounds, one of my favorite things to look at. A puddle beside the road with a little bit of blacktop oil in it was just nothing but a catchment area for rainbows to me. The difference between a puddle and an actual rainbow showing over the ocean itself is a judgment, an agreement. I've been to a place where I was able to see everything that appears to be appears under a set of agreements and judgments. Been to a place where I got to see that if you really get that there truly is no death, you have an opportunity to just spring to delight about some of the weird characters we are blessed to populate this planet with. Been to a place where I got informed that some of my favorite characters in the movies are the very people I judge against in real life. In Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, Joan Fontaine's character, Blanche, she was okay, I liked her. But I didn't leave that movie talking about her or thrilled by her. No, it was Bette Davis. She's the one that made that movie for me. Bette Davis, she got her sister. She's bound to a wheelchair, she can't walk, she can't do for herself. At one point, she's telling her mean sister, Baby Jane, if I weren't confined like I am, you wouldn't treat me like this. You wouldn't be so mean to me if I weren't stuck here, unable to move. And Baby Jane took a puff off her cigarette and went, "But you are, Blanche. You are." It thrilled me to the core. Thrilled me, and it thrills me every time I think about her. Someone once told me that Bette Davis said that was one of my favorite characters to play. Playing Baby Jane brought me so much joy and made me so happy. However, the idea of being Baby Jane would be very painful, would be very isolating, would be a struggle to live up and walk around in every day. When I saw Gone with the Wind, Melanie was the personification of God itself, love itself, forgiveness and service itself. I liked Melanie, but I love Scarlett. She didn't mind using you, manipulating, doing whatever she could for her own selfish purposes. As long as she was on the movie screen and I was caught up in the movie, she was my all-time favorite that day. But I was glad I didn't have to go home and live with her in real life. Where I've been blessed to be is in a place where I got there's no such thing as real life. Billy Shakespeare was right. All the world is a stage. We are all actors acting on that stage. And when our part is done, we will curtsy or bow and gracefully take our leave. I thank God for the great knowing inside me that there is no such thing as death, that everything is on purpose, and the great delight of the universe is that you are happy and having fun. We came to this planet for a time that's temporary and for a purpose that is eternal. The eternal purpose of being the light dancing in the shadow to reveal the light dancing in the shadow. To be a good hero, you got to have a good villain. To really shine, you have to have a dark background. Nothing's going wrong, everything is on purpose, and we are all one. I've said the Course in Miracles statement so many times in the many, many years since that material came out, the statement that says, I am one self, united with my Creator, at one with every aspect of creation, and I am limitless in power, and I am limitless in peace. I've spoken that, preached it, turned it into a song, and I've had the blessed opportunity to get that it's so true. On the 16th of August, my sister-in-law, Karen, Timothy was out of town in Rhode Island on business. My sister-in-law dropped me off at the hospital for a routine colonoscopy. They told her to pick me back up in 2 hours, and she was all set to do that until she got a call at some point. And the call said, when you come back, don't go to the department where you dropped him off. Go to the emergency room. He has just flatlined. He went into cardiac arrest. We are rushing him now to the emergency room, and we are going to try to make sure that he is with us and that he stays with us and that he's okay. When they were saying everything they were saying when I came out of being on the other side, there were like 4 men all scheduled for their colonoscopies. And I overheard that the guy next to me, his name was Mr. Pepione. And Mr. Pepione, he's got this little fishing and hunting store in town, and no one's ever in there. And we wonder, how does he keep his doors open? So I got to hear Mr. Pepione say that he keeps his doors open by going into his savings, because once people were able to get their licenses online, no one does come into the store. He keeps it open because he loves that place. I heard him say, that little store is home to me. And at some point, when I was in a shadow place, I heard people saying, oh my God, he flatlined. Oh my God, he's gone into cardiac arrest. And then I went to unconsciousness, and when I returned, I remember thinking, I heard all this hustle and bustle. We've got to get him down to the so-and-so, and we so-and-so, and we hope his heart stays beating. And da-da. And I laid there going, poor Mr. Pepione. Something horrible has happened to that man. I hope he's okay. God bless you, Mr. Pepione. The light of God surrounds you, brother. You are the light of God. And I opened my eyes, and it was me they were around, and me they were gurneying down the hall really quick. And there were moments where I was on the gurney looking up at the ceiling, flash by, and times where I was on the ceiling looking at this body that I knew was my residence, but I knew wasn't my home. Within 10 minutes, I was begging them to let me go home to Montague. Karen and everybody were saying, no, you don't get it. You don't get it. And I was like, I feel fine. I don't want to stay here. We have to do a battery of tests on you. I don't want, can I come back tomorrow and do my tests? No, we're not releasing you. Why? Because you died. But I'm not dead. But you died. They explained it was about a 2.5 minute process where suddenly during the colonoscopy, and I'm sure because of the anesthesia that was either too potent for me, even back when I was a hippie, I could never take down her, so I would just pass right out. I had a friend that was like, I'm going to come up with the perfect amount of a Quaalude to give to you. We're going to give you 1/4 of a Quaalude. He gave me 1/4 of a Quaalude on the porch of a bar, and when we were walking to the parking lot to get in the car, all of a sudden he's talking to me and notice I'm not answering, and he turns around, and I'm sound asleep in the middle of the street. I can't do downers, so I'm sure it must have been the anesthesia. But they said that suddenly my heart stopped, slowed down to 6 beats per minute, and then stopped completely for about a 20-second period, and then began to beat again at a beat of 6 beats per minute, and then suddenly came back as though it had not stopped in the first place. The blessing of this, other than the fact that you're transparent and I can see it, and there's nothing you can do about it, a blessing other than the fact that I now know that when I observe real life baby Janes and Scarlets and others, that I can just sit on the subway or sit on the street and I can observe them with as much joy as I observe my brothers and sisters on film. And I can remember that Billy Shakespeare truly was right. All the world really is a stage. We're all here acting out our parts. We get to be the good guy and the bad guy. We get to try to remember when one's a Crip and one's a Blood that they're all one blood, beyond all blood. That the Calvary and the Indians are all one. That there really is no separation. I remember back when we were in the Subud, I gave a lesson where I said, it's a world of pretending that we're living in. We're all pretending we're not the other people. I'm me and you're not. You're you and I'm not. That's the game we're here playing. So we got black people pretending they're not white people pretending they're not black people. We got Republicans pretending they're not Democrats, Democrats pretending they're not Republicans. We've got gay people pretending they're not straight, and straight people pretending they're not gay. We have Puerto Ricans pretending they're not Cubans, and Cubans pretending they're not Puerto Rican. We have Jamaicans pretending they're not Haitians, and Haitians pretending they're not Jamaicans. Men pretending they're not women, and women pretending they're not men. We are all one self. And if we're going to be here in a game where we're pretending I'm me and you're not, you're you and I'm not, we ought to have some fun. It's too short. It goes by much too quickly. One of the gifts I wanted to tell you that I got was that they did not let me leave the hospital. I did not stop trying, but they did not let me leave. There was nothing really that Karen or Timothy could do to stop me from trying. So I tried. I wanted to go home. One of the gifts was that they kept me there and they did all of these tests. I'm the guy who did not go to a doctor for 28 years. I was done with doctors in my youth and said, I'm never going back to them. Anytime I have a problem, I'm going to do it myself. I have stitched my own arm up with black thread and a needle. I've cut a cyst off my leg with a box cutter 2 times and never again. The second time, I got infected. First time went good. When the second one came, oh, I've been here, did that before. This ain't no thing. I cut that bad boy out. The next thing you know, in a couple of weeks later, I woke up with lockjaw. And Tim was saying, will you let me take you to the emergency room now? Hurry, hurry, hurry. I won't be doing that again. But I never went to a doctor for 28 years, so suddenly I had this eye condition, so I had to go, so I had to get on MassHealth, and they got me in there, so now I'm in this world of doctors where I got to put an eye drop and take an eye pill every morning, and take a water pill every morning, and take this shake every day. I'm in the system. I'm one of these guys I said I would never be. But thank God for MassHealth, and thank God for them doing the battery of tests, because although a guy who never goes to the doctor, he can sit around and say, oh, I know I'm cool. I know everything's okay. Yeah, I know I'm a smoker, but no, cancer's not a thing. That's in, no. I'm cool. Everything's okay. I love drinking my Sam Adams. But I know my liver's healthy. And people will say, you don't know nothing. You ain't been to no doctor. It's all a guessing game. So thank God now I do know that there is no cancer in my body. I do know that my lungs are clear. I do know that my liver is great. My kidneys are great. All of my organs are great. Me and Tim, he's my health proxy. We've been blown away. They keep calling me and taking me into all these specialists. And these specialists keep saying, looking at my thing and going, you cannot be a smoker. Yes, he is. Are you serious? Yes, he is. Oh, my God. Well, you're clear. We know some damage probably happened to your heart. Get up on this, what do you call it, treadmill. I had never been on a treadmill in my life. Those women cracked up for 20 minutes. It took me 20 minutes to be able just to get on the treadmill. And once I got on, my body wasn't going. And they were like, no, don't march, just walk. And I go, I'm trying to walk. It was so funny. And but after those series of that kind of tests, I finally got going. And after a series of those, after the third one, they said, it doesn't appear that any damage has been done to your heart. And we are stunned at your clarity of mind. We were stunned that you were just suddenly getting up off the gurney saying, I want to go home. Is it cool if I go home? Like within 15 minutes after flatlining. So whatever you're doing must be working. And I said, well, clearly you know it isn't that I don't smoke. You know it isn't that I'm alcohol free because I like my Sam Adams. I've shared with you a couple of other little smoking indulgences that have been my friends since 1966. I told you I don't exercise, that I have been my own doctor for 28 years, so you know it's none of that. You want to know what it is? One of the women said, what is it since you think you know? And I went, it's all the heart-to-heart hugs. I just heart-to-heart hug everybody. If you heart-to-heart somebody, it strengthens your heart. They can do testing, muscle testing. You give somebody a hug on the normal side that we do, the opposite side from where the heart is, you give them that kind of hug, muscle test them, take a picture of their aura, have them hug the way we normally hug, muscle test them, take another picture of their aura, do strength testing, check out the drips in the brain, nothing changes. You're the same person before that hug as you were after that hug, and the same after as you were before. But you give a heart-to-heart hug, at least for a period of 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Do those tests, muscle testing, you're stronger, both people. You both have that endorphin drip, both people. Your aura's brighter, both people. They looked at me like I was crazy, and I didn't care. I said, that's why I don't have any damage to my heart after that experience, in my belief. Because where I got to go, I also got to know we are living in our belief. We say it all the time. We read about it. We preach about it. We sing songs about it. And yet we forget it so often. We're living in an outpicturing of what we believe. Somebody said, well, what's your thing with the cancer? Like, how come? You know, I was certain they were going to find that you had cancer. I was just knew it. When you left after so-and-so, me and the nurses were talking like the poor guy is going to probably find out he's got cancer. And I said, you know what? I thought I noted a look of disappointment in your eye when I came back here. You wanted to be right. You really wanted to be right. You had so much faith in me having cancer from smoking cigarettes. And I didn't have any faith in that. But let me tell you where my faith is around cancer. I do not have a microwave in my house. Never have, never will. I do not drink any kind of soda pops. Nothing with all that carbon. I just truly believe, for me and my belief system, it's not Newports, it's microwave food. For me and my belief system, it's sodas, which give you so much acidity in your system, and acidity is the hotbed of all disease. I eat 7 raw almonds every day, have been for 20, 30 years, ever since somebody read a list of things that Edgar Cayce said were life-supporting. They read that to me back in the 70s, and the only thing that stood out was, seriously? He said, if you eat 7 raw almonds a day, cancer cannot form in your body? Really? It has that much alkaline in it? To keep the acidity away? That's my belief system. So I'm smoking a cigarette, and my mom's looking at me, cutting her eyes. Boy, 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 you need to get off them things, trying to get cancer. No, Mama, I'm not over here trying to get no cancer. I'm over here enjoying my cigarette. I have eaten my almonds. Unlike you, I'm not into microwave and I'm not into soda pop. My mom thought, I started smoking when I was 16. My mom thought before I was 21 I was going to be, you know, one of those people who developed cancer. The interesting thing is that my mother passed from cancer, breast cancer, which metastasized throughout her body. And one of the things she said to me in the hospital in her final couple of days was, Lord, boy, who'd have thought it? Me laying here going out with cancer, and you standing up over me looking all healthy with cigarette breath. Everything's an outpicturing of what you believe. I truly believe that if I got a microwave, my belief system would cause a disease because I believe it so strongly. I don't know why nothing on Edgar Cayce's list stood out to me but the raw almonds, but it stood out because I resonated with it. I got goosebumps. I don't know why they would have been able to bring me back if I was not supposed to continue to praise the goodness of our Creator, to embrace me as I am and you as you are, knowing we are all one. I feel like where I went was home. There was nothing but light. It wasn't like my experience of blacking out on the highway some years ago. I didn't see my light flash before my eyes. I did not hear the words, well done. I did not see a light at the end of a tunnel. I saw light everywhere. There was no dark tunnel. There was nothing but the light, like an explosion of the culmination, the ending of a fireworks display. And guess what? It all was exploding from the center of my heart while my heart was at rest. For the first time in 65 years plus, my heart wasn't doing anything. And I got to explode out and knew that I was everything. Knew it was a play. Knew it was temporary. And knew that it was on purpose. And then all of the light at some point when they got me back just went out from out throughout the multiverse and pew, back into my heart. I told Timothy, I said, I have a little bit of paranoia because I had an intuitive knowing that the cells in my heart have cellular memory right now. The memory was that all of a sudden when I flatlined, when I went into cardiac arrest, the cells of my heart went, what just happened? Whatever happened feels awesome. What do you call this? And one other cell went, rest. I've never rested. None of us have. Not since we were developed inside of the spacesuit that was inside of a larger spacesuit. We've been going, ba-doom, 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 through thick and thin, for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health, through scary times and fun times. Ba-doom, ba-doom, ba-doom. What's it called again? Rest. I like this rest. I'd love to stay at rest. So I told Timothy inside myself, I can hear these little rascals talking to each other. They're lamenting the fact that they are now at work constantly, and they really love this rest thing, I think, just through cellular memory, dude. I'm a little paranoid to lay down and take a meditation. Sleep? No, I'm good. So, dude, I think every time I shut my eyes that my cellular memory and my heart are going, we got to go for this rest thing again, babe. We got to get down with some more rest. I told you that the heart some years ago, that the heart is the gateway to heaven, that it is the bridge between heaven and earth, that it is a meeting place between who we really are and who we think we are. Who we think we are is the role we're playing, just like Joan Fontaine is not really Blanche. Betty Davis is not really Baby Jane. These are roles that they're playing. Vivien Leigh played Scarlet. She had fun playing Scarlet, but she didn't want to be Scarlet. So who we think we are, the guy or the male or female that Billy Shakespeare talked about playing the role, that's the horizontal line. This is us in time, us in costume, us in our spacesuits, born this day, set to die this day. The vertical line is who we really are. That's the part of you that I can see through. That's the translucent part of you. That's the spirit of you. It's the spirit of me. And the spirit of who I am, the Christ self of who I am, must intersect the so-called human self that I am. And the intersection takes place right here at the heart, which is why it's the gateway between heaven and earth. If I am not centered in my heart, then I am not at home. Home is where my true self intersects the actor acting out the part of Carlos Wayne Anderson. As long as I am at home, I am in power. And the fullness of the Christ Spirit, the fullness of the power of God, is free to move from the allness down and intersect the horizontal line of me living my life on the plane. Home is my power. When I'm out this way, I'm in the past. And Lord knows how much time we spend in the past. Either lamenting the past, and horrible things that happened in the past, the wounding things that happened in the past, how we were used and abused, cheated and mistreated in the past. And we're not at home when we're in the past. It's a point of weakness. We can't be intersected by the pureness of the spirit that we really are. The actor, the spirit that is animating the actor on the stage of life. In this direction is the future. We can always be thinking about the future, either hoping and praying that the future will set us free, that something will occur, we will find our significant other, we will have enough money to retire, we will this, we will that in the future, or On the flip side of that, we are worried about the future. The future is coming too fast for me. I do not have enough money to retire. I haven't gotten my affairs in order. The future, the future. Whether you're looking in the future and living in the future as to something you dislike or that worries you or brings you fear and anxiety or makes you dance and clap and get happy, or the same with the past, in either place, you're not home. When they say home is where the heart is, they really, it's true. I got to see that. Home is where the heart is. When we're centered here, we are at home. That's the power of the meaning of the cross. The power of the meaning of the cross has nothing to do, for me, with what occurred 2,000 years ago on a hill in Galilee. That's historical. I can decide whether I want to believe it or whether I don't want to believe it, but the point is, I wasn't there. It would be a matter of faith. Where I am being called to place my faith is in the now. To remember that right here, right now, is the point of all of my power. This is where I am fully alive when I am in my heart. All of heaven can open its windows and pour me out a blessing that there's not even room enough for me to receive. I just have to give it away. I have to tithe it. I have to give it to charities. I have to serve. There's such an overflow. So it's the be here now that I was brought to in my experience. I preached metaphorically that I was blind and now I see, meaning that I was blind to the beauty of the world. I was blind to the miracle of living. I was blind to the worthiness of all my brothers and sisters for my compassion, for my love, and for my upliftment. But when I was a kid and I would say I was blind and now I see, I had an Aunt Irene that would say, oh boy, ain't none of y'all that's preaching you was blind, really been blind. Because she really was blind. She was blind, and then through someone laying hands on her and praying and her believing, she got her sight returned 3 different times. So she hated people to just metaphorically say, I was blind and now I see. She would just interrupt and go, oh boy, you wasn't blind. I was blind, and now I see. Okay. So I preached I was blind and now I see. I preached I was lost and now I'm found. That's the one I was. That's the one experientially. I was lost. Oh my God. Some of my years of living in the city when I was 21 and 22, I had so many friends. I had so many people I knew and loved at the acting school, at the Negro Ensemble Company that I was at, and people at work. But I got to tell you, there were so many times where I got up out of my bed at 3 o'clock in the morning because I was just so lonely. I had to go out in the streets of New York and just hope to run into somebody that I could meet their eyes and go, how you doing? Good, and you? And I'd roam around, and then I would come back home. That's what I call being lost. And I was lost, and now I'm found. But God knows I never expected to stand up here on this platform looking at all these translucent bodies that are so beautiful and are each and every one a reflection of who I am and who God is, because there is no difference. I get that you live in my home. Not that you live in Montague. You live in my home. I never thought I'd be able to say, by the way, you guys, a week ago Tuesday, I died. I was dead. I'm still integrating. I'm still coming back into my body. It's startling and amazing. I can barely drive a car, because how do you drive a vehicle of light through the light? I have to bring everything down and make it opaque before I get behind a wheel. How can you maneuver through the light when you are the light and the light is all there is? Sometimes I have to, on purpose, make things a little more opaque so I can be in the world, but not so opaque that I'm of the world. To be in the world, but not of the world. In other words, not letting the world determine how I feel and what kind of day this is for me. No, it's the best day ever. You know why? Because I said so. That's why. Because I said so. The privilege of being dead is being alive after you've been dead. And although this marvelous, amazing world is not my home, I get to bring home to it. Would you close your eyes for one moment and take a deep, cleansing breath? And just identify your consciousness in your heart center, reminding yourself that your heart is the gateway between heaven and earth. This is where who you really are as an eternal light being that was never born and can never die. It is pure power, pure spirit, pure creativity. It's intersecting who you think you are, the role you're playing right now. And if you're not having fun playing the role you're playing, just play a different role. People drop out of plays and movies all the time and go get a different part. Step into, right now, creating yourself as all you wish to be, knowing that the entire universe is conspiring to bless you. Remember, you will never die, not who you really are. This is where you live. This is home. Home is where the heart is. And everyone and everything is at home in your home. God is in heaven. Heaven is in you. Holy is your name. God wants you to know you have nothing to fear. And there is nothing and no one to blame. You've been informed. Your captivity is over. You've been informed. In truth, you're free. And so it is.
And as you relax into your seats and allow your seat to support you and take a deep cleansing breath. And give thanks for that breath that travels through your being and that infuses every cell of your body. Each breath knows where to go, what to do, and how to do it. We give thanks together for life itself. We give thanks for being here in this now moment, having been reminded of the truth of what we are. Divinely created beings, created in the image and in the likeness of the love that created us. What a blessing it is to know that truth. What a gift it is to know that we can lean into that truth anytime, day or night. We can lean into it with gratitude and celebration of life's many blessings. We can lean into that truth in times of trouble. If we should journey upon a moment, a period of time, when everything around looks other than good, other than God, other than right and perfect, it is at that time that we lean into the faith that we already have, that faith that has already been placed in us since the beginning. Today's daily word reminded us that we can claim that faith, that we can release, let go of worry, fear, and trepidation, and lean into the faith that we have. And it is a gift to know that if I don't feel faith-filled, it doesn't change the truth. So if at any moment you don't feel that you have it, you've been here, you've been sitting here, you've been absorbing. And through the gift of memory, you can recall, I heard. That faith is, and that it lives in me. And through the power that is already in me, I can be willing to know that I can harness that power of release, of renunciation, of elimination, and eliminate, let go of what no longer serves me. So as we take a moment in silence, we lean into the truth. That each of us is the very embodiment of the love that created us. And allow that knowing, that love, to flow through from head to toe, into every corner, into every nook and cranny of your being. And know that all of it is right and perfect right now. Take a breath. And as you breathe out, feel the gratitude for knowing that the one power and one presence in the universe expressing through us is God the good, absolute good. We in turn are good. Know that. Be willing to know that. Be willing to lean into your faith, the very faith of your being. And always remember, with a breath and one change of thought, that each of us can begin again. And we are so grateful for these truths. As we breathe one last time, in and out, cleansing breath, giving thanks for knowing that God is and all is well, and so it is.